Again, I would like first to thank the organizers for this nice invitation. So I will talk about various aspects of physics with large dimensions. This is a possibility that became theoretically viable after 95. That means after the theoretical understanding of non-perturbative effects in string theory. And it gave a new framework for particle physics, which is based on the observation that the string scale can be, in principle, dissociated from the scale of quantum gravity, as I'm going to describe more detail. And it had two main consequences. The first is a possible brain wall description of our universe. And the second is that strings may be seen in accelerators. And in general, string physics could be closer to what we thought previously in energies. So the main theoretical motivation is that one could offer protection to the Gates hierarchy, which is alternative to low energy supersymmetry, and this is simply by lowering the string scale to TeV. Then, since the string scale plays the role of the ultraviolet cutoff of the effective field theory, the divergences, in particular the quadratic divergences in the Higgs mass, will be cut off by the string scale, which, if it is at the TeV, then there is no hierarchy to worry about. So, in fact, the question of Gates hierarchy, which is the main motivation, as I mentioned, in this idea, is why gravity is so weak compared to other three known interactions. And in particular, we know that in any quantum theory, all the masses of elementary particles increase to, because of the quadratic divergences, increase to the higher mass scale of the problem. And if gravity is present, then the highest mass scale is the Planck mass, and therefore all the masses tend to become proportional to the Planck mass. In fact, supersymmetry, one of the main motivations of supersymmetry, although historically it was introduced differently, comes from the protection to the hierarchy, and this protection is achieved due to cancellations between fermions and bosons, which belong in the same supermultiplet. So essentially, in the standard model, it has to double the spectrum, introduce superparticles as partners of all particles that we know. And since supersymmetry must be broken, the mass splitting between bosons and fermions should be not higher than the TeV in order to be able to guarantee the protection of the hierarchy. So supersymmetry under this motivation must have a breaking scale which is not far from TeV, and therefore it predicts a spectrum of superparticles at these energies. Now, similarly, TeV strings, in other words, strings with a string scale at the TeV, imply that with the same, if one wants to replace supersymmetry by these theories, then this implies that the string scale should not be far from the TeV, and therefore could be reached in future accelerators. Now, what I'm going to talk in these two lectures, today I will basically I will present here some of the of topics that I would give in longer lectures. What I'm going to concentrate is on realizations of strings with TeV scale in the context of the so-called type 1 theory and deep brains, so which uses closed and open strings. So I will talk briefly on this realization today, and then I will discuss the problem of Gates hierarchy and supersymmetry breaking, and then I will present the main experimental predictions for particle accelerators and for experiments that test gravity at short distances. And I will return back to various theoretical issues. And the first is the breaking of supersymmetry. So I will motivate a scenario in which the bulk is supersymmetric, while supersymmetry is broken only on the world volume of deep brains. And then in this context, tomorrow I will discuss various theoretical questions which have to do with breaking of electroweak symmetry, masses of anomalous U1s, gauge coupling unification, and I will describe a minimal embedding of the standard model in this context. So I understood that many of you are PhD students. I don't know how many of you there are. There are many. So I don't know if you. I will try to be elementary, but if you have questions, you should not hesitate to ask me, and then I could continue on the blackboard and maybe show various things that maybe are not clear. As I mentioned, what I'm going to discuss mainly is the theory of the so-called type 1, which provides a perturbative framework for model building with low string scale. This theory has two sectors. The gravity sector is described by excitations of closed strings, which propagate in all internal dimensions of string theory. So in 10 dimensions, which I'll call bulk. And while gauge interactions are localized on deep brains, so you can have several types of brains which can be parallel or intersecting. And in general, I will describe two types of excitations. So the excitations of gauge particles correspond to open strings with ends on these brains. I will describe two types of such open strings. Open strings with ends on parallel deep brains or in the same deep brain. And then open strings with two ends in two different deep brains which are orthogonal in the compact space. I will motivate this possibility, which is in which the bulk is supersymmetric, so the closed strings come from the so-called type 2 superstring, which is supersymmetric to lowest order, while supersymmetry is broken by the configuration of brains, in other words, by putting every brain preserves a certain number of supersymmetries, which is half of the supersymmetry of the bulk. So if for instance, you have a configuration of brains which preserve different amount of supersymmetries, then supersymmetry will be broken globally on the intersection of, for instance, of these brains. Now, in such in such a scenario, one has a discrete choice to place the standard model. If the standard model is located on a non-supersymmetric brain, then there is no choice. The string scale must be the TEV in order to protect the hierarchy. This is the possibility that I'm going to describe. However, one could imagine a different possibility in which the standard model is located on a supersymmetric brain. Then the existence of non-supersymmetric brain somewhere else in the bulk can play the role of can replace the hidden sector of supersymmetry breaking, which then will be transmitted to us to the observable brain by gravitational interactions or string interactions. Which will be suppressed by the Planck scale. In this case, the breaking of supersymmetry to us will be proportional to the string scale divided by the Planck scale. And then this requires a string scale to be at intermediate energies. So that was also a possibility. This is also a possibility that has been discussed, but I'm not going to say more here in the following. So I come back to the first point, which is to discuss the framework, which is a realization of TV strings. In principle, there are two possibilities to realize such theories, either using the type 1 theory that I just mentioned, or the type 2, which is a theory which contains only closed strings. Now, these two realizations require some parameter to adjust, which would, as I will mention, which will account for the hierarchy. And this parameter could be either the size of extra dimensions, which are perpendicular to the brain where we live, and they can have a size up to sub-millimeter. This is in the type 1 realization. Or the type 2 offers another possibility, which is to tune the string coupling to very small values in order to achieve the hierarchy. If I have time at the end, I will discuss about these theories, but I mainly concentrate to the first realization. By the way, these two theories also describe the all heterotic string in the strongly coupled regime. The SO32 strongly coupled is described by type 1, and the 8 cross 8 by type 2. We'll come with type 1. This is the picture that I will have in my mind, which we'll go to, we're going to do more precise in the following. We'll assume that the standard model is localized on some set of coincident deep brains. And then, since we start with 10 dimensions, these deep brains have two type of these deep brains are extended in part of the 10 dimensions. In general, it's a P brain. In other words, they are extended in P spatial dimensions, which are longitudinal along the brain, and they remain in P minus 3 are transverse. Since the whole space, there are 9 space dimensions, the remaining P minus 3 is 9 minus P, are 9 minus P, in fact, because the sum is 9. Now, among the dimensions which are longitudinal along the brain, 3 of them are those that we feel, the non-compact dimensions, and the remaining P minus 3 must be compact. And the compactification radius is of the compactification scale cannot be larger than TV because those dimensions are seen by gauge interactions, and therefore there are experimental there would be experimental conflict if we have dimensions which are larger than even TV seen by gauge interactions. However, the transverse dimensions can be much larger, because along the transverse dimensions only gravity propagates, and the knowledge of gravity is much weaker than the other interactions at short distances. So this is a two different types of extra dimensions I'm going to use in the following with this notation, so the longitudinal and transverse, that's what you should remember. Now, by imposing the weak coupling condition, in other words, that by imposing that this theory is weakly coupled, one finds that the longitudinal dimensions must have the string size, cannot be much different than the string size. Otherwise, we follow to a non-perturbative regime, while there is no constraint for the transverse dimensions. I mean, that is consistent with what I just mentioned, the fact that the longitudinal dimensions are seen by gauge interactions, while transverse are seen only by gravity, which is much softer. So I will assume that there are small n dimensions transverse to the brain, which can be much larger, and on the longitudinal or the order of the string scale. And then we obtain this relation between the Planck scale and the string scale, MI, or, for the type 1, M1, where we have here the volume of the transverse space. Now, this relation depends on which theory, of which string theory we consider. For instance, if you do, if you try to work out the similar relation in the heterotic string, you find that the Planck scale and the string scale are proportional. G is the four-dimensional gauge coupling. Yeah, that's why if the two scales are proportional, then that's why the heterotic string, the string scale is fixed to be very high. However, in type 1 theory, you obtain also the volume of the compactification scale transverse to the brain, and the reason is that the gauge interactions appear on brains, which is not the case for the heterotic string. Now, therefore, one can dissociate the Planck scale from the type 1 from the string scale, and in particular make the string scale much lower in the expense of introducing extra large transverse dimensions. And there are two main properties. The first is that the string coupling is fixed by the gauge coupling square, so the string coupling is G square, so it's perturbative. And the second is that gravity becomes strong at the string scale, and the reason is that this combination here is nothing else than the Planck mass of a higher dimensional theory, which contains n extra dimensions. The reason is that gravity propagates also in the bulk, which can be much larger than the string length. And therefore, this relation is identical to the Gauss law of the higher dimensional gravity, which tells us that the gravitational field lines can spread into the bulk, and therefore gravity can appear on the brain much weaker than it is actually, because there are extra large dimensions in the bulk. So if we put numbers, then for a string scale, if we take string scale 1 TV, then this scenario requires that the size of the extra dimensions must vary between millimeter and the Fermi, depending how many we assume to be large, from 2 up to 6. Now, essentially, up to now, it was just a description of short description of the framework. I don't know if you have questions or if you want to make things more clear before proceeding discussing. I mean, you should tell me. I don't know what at what level you need to be. So I will start discussing the first main question, which is the problem, the question of hierarchy in this context. So the hierarchy, which is, as I mentioned, why the Planck mass is much bigger than the electroweak scale, it is translated into this context, into a question why there are large transverse dimensions. In other words, why there are dimensions whose size is much larger than the string length. And as I mentioned, depending how many extra dimensions you put, the ratio between the size of these dimensions and the string length varies between 10 to the 15 and 10 to the 5, depending how many you obtain. So if you have the more you put, less severe becomes the ratio, but still there is a big number to explain. Now, this question has two aspects. There is a dynamical aspect to explain how the theory can choose such, can choose some ratio of this type, and a weaker aspect is the technical aspect, which is the aspect of stability. In other words, if we choose by hand some non-supersymmetric string theory in which some of the dimensions are much larger than of the type that I described, much larger than the string length, the question is whether this choice is stable under radiative corrections. And by stability, I don't mean in general a stability in the sense of every quantity, but just, for instance, not the stability in the cosmological constant, but just have in mind gauge interactions. In other words, the stability in the mass of the Higgs. If you have a non-supersymmetric theory, you have a Higgs on the brain, is the mass of the Higgs stable under radiative corrections? In other words, are the quadratic divergences in the mass of the Higgs cut off by the string scale, or the fact that there are large dimensions can destabilize the hierarchy? In fact, this is the same technical aspect that supersymmetry, low-energy supersymmetry solves. In other words, if we impose that the scale of supersymmetry breaking, in other words, that the mass splitting between superpartners is at the TV, then we know that there are no that this is stable. There are no under radiative corrections. Now, in string theory, this stability has a subtlety, and this subtlety can arise from the following diagrams, from the emission of massless closed strings from any process in the brain. So we imagine here that we have some process in the brain described by this blue line. And then from any such a process, you can emit a massless closed string. And this this emission could lead to a problem with the stability. And one way to understand it is the following, has as follows. Such a diagram can be seen in two ways. If I see it from the observer which lives on the brain, then such a diagram corresponds to an ultraviolet divergence because it amounts to integrate an open string which goes around the loop. And the open strings are give rise to gauge particles. So it is cut off by some ultraviolet divergence. On the other hand, if I see it from the transverse side, then from the transverse side, it is a three-level diagram, and it corresponds just to the emission of a closed string at the three-level. This emission could have an infrared divergence if this propagation, if the string is massless and you have a propagation in the bulk of a massless particle. In fact, this property that you can see the diagram from this way, and you interpret it ultraviolet divergences as infrared divergences in the other channel, is a general property which is also familiar for the, from the gauge theory, string theory correspondence, or ADS-CFT correspondence. Now, the problem arises now as follows, that if the dimensionality of the bulk is one, in other words, if the bulk contains one dimension which is much bigger than the others, then the propagation of a massless particle in one dimension has infrared divergences which grow, infrared growth in terms of the distance. So if the distance is the size of the bulk, so for instance, if you have just one extra dimension, then you generate a linear infrared divergence which is proportional to the size of the bulk. And this linear infrared divergence, if you translate it in four-dimensional parameters by using this relation that I mentioned before, for n equal 1, you find that something which is linear in the size of the bulk is quadratic in the Planck mass. So you obtain a quadratic sensitivity, ultraviolet sensitivity, the Planck mass when you express it in four-dimensional parameters. However, if the bulk has no such dimension, one dimension much larger than the others, in other words, if the dimensionality of the bulk is bigger than one, or in general, if there are no particular one dimension which is much larger than the other, then this problem does not exist, because then there is no infrared divergence. Yes.
In all these considerations, you're assuming that the bulk is flat.
Yes.
Yes. So you're not including the back reaction of the brain on the bulk.
No, because here, okay, didn't mean, it was good that you mentioned. I consider the string propagator propagation in flat space. So although you have the six extra dimensions are compactified, they are compactified toroidally, I mean, in a flat space. No curved background. Yes, in fact, not only the vacuum. Here you can imagine any process, any scattering process on the brain can emit a massless closed string. So if there is one dimension which is much bigger than the others, then this massless closed string can propagate effectively in some part of the space which is one dimensional. And this will induce a divergence, an infrared divergence, which is linear. And translated back from the point of view of the brain, this is a quadratic, gives you a term which goes quadratically with the Planck mass, with the four-dimensional Planck mass. So the condition for the stability of the hierarchy is that there is no one dimension much larger than the other. In other words, that all bulk fields propagate in at least two large extra dimensions. No bulk propagation in one large dimension. There is also a different way to satisfy conditions by canceling locally the tadpoles. In other words, by imposing conditions in the spectrum so that the coefficient of this infrared divergence is canceled. But that gives severe constraints for model building. So that is, under this condition, the hierarchy is stable. Now, if you have more than one dimension, if you have, for instance, two dimensions, then instead of having linear divergences, you have logarithmic divergences, which means infrared divergences with the size of the bulk, which means that you will have corrections which depend logarithmically with the size of the bulk, and therefore when you translate them in four-dimensional parameter, you will find logarithmic corrections proportional to the Planck scale over the string scale. So this is... In fact, this is a welcome property. It doesn't destabilize the hierarchy because you create only logarithmic corrections. And in fact, it may be useful to address the second aspect of the hierarchy, which is the dynamical aspect. That is, to find ways to, by minimizing some effective potential, which give you extrema which are hierarchically different than the fundamental scale and the string scale. And the reason is that if you have an effective potential, for instance, which depends, which have logarithms, then you can imagine to obtain minima which are much different than the fundamental scale, like examples in string theory, like the inverse hierarchy that was used also for determining the scale of supersymmetry. So in fact, the presence of these logarithmic corrections is similar to renormalizable field theory from the point of view that you have that the various amplitudes on the brain can acquire corrections which depend logarithmically on the size of the Planck mass or the size of the bulk, and they can be resummed by using the classical two-dimensional equations in the bulk. Why classical? Because fields vary logarithmically, and therefore the derivatives are suppressed. So if you are restrict to the two-derivative effective action in the bulk, you can use it you can use these classical equations of motion to resum the logarithms. So it reminds a lot the property of renormal algebra field theory. So the conclusion from this discussion is that non-supersymmetric TV strings offer the same protection of the hierarchy as softly broken supersymmetry of the TV, in the sense that the radiative corrections to the string mass depend at most logarithmically on the Planck scale under the condition, under this condition. Do you have questions? So now I come to the second issue, which is the stability in general, which means don't look just only at the Higgs mass, but we look at, for instance, at the vacuum energy. Now, the vacuum energy in a non-supersymmetric string model behaves in general just by power analysis as the string scale to the power 4 plus n if there are n large extra dimensions in the bulk whose size is much bigger than the string size. So these extra dimensions are practically non-compact from the point of view of at the string scale. And the cosmological constant, or if you want the vacuum energy in the bulk, scales like the string scale to this power, 4 plus n. However, you see, in these models, there are two types of vacuum energy. There is a vacuum energy in the bulk, and you can have a different vacuum energy on the brain. In fact, by starting with this bulk vacuum energy, one generates vacuum energy on the brain by projecting it, by multiplying this value with the volume of the bulk, so with r to the n, if I assume r n extra dimensions of the same size. So translated this combination in four-dimensional parameters, you find that the vacuum energy on the brain is proportional to the Planck mass square times the string scale square. This is, so you generate a value which is much bigger than the string scale, because if you had just vacuum energy generated by the string scale, it should be m string to the power 4, not m string square times m Planck square. Now, this is not unreasonable, because this also exists in supersymmetric theories, and these corrections correspond to the quadratic divergences to the cosmological constant when you compute the cosmological constant in softly broken supersymmetric theories, and corresponds to the supertrace M square. The supertrace M square is a quantity which is quadratically to the cutoff, so M Planck square, times the supersymmetric breaking scale square. So it vanishes with a breaking of supersymmetry, but not as a quartic power, but as a quadratic power. And as far as I know, in the context of supersymmetry, there is no natural way to impose the vanishing of the such corrections to all orders. I mean, you can obtain the vanishing of super trace M squared by imposing some condition in the spectrum to one loop, but then it will be generated higher orders. Yes?
You say that you can determine lambda based on purely dimensional ground.
Yes. I took into account, in fact, this is the extra scale. I mean, the bulk, you see, that's why I distinguished the bulk and the brain cosmological constant. Okay, so the bulk cosmological vacuum energy is the one that you feel at energies which are of the order of the string scale. So that means that at these energies, the compact dimensions, which are much larger than a string length, can be thought as non-compact. So you have, like, you obtain a result which is like if you have 4 plus n extra dimensions. But then this quantity introduces another quantity in the brain which is much bigger. That's what I did. No, no, I mean lower. It could be by accident. Okay? Like in supersymmetric theories, you could impose the vanishing of the supertrace by adjusting the spectrum. I mean, the supertrace M square, you just the sum over M square with plus and minus bosons and fermions. So you can impose a relation which this is zero, but then it will not remain zero. Now, however, that is the point that I'm coming. In the context of that I'm talking, so in the context of TV strings, there is a way to impose the vanishing of this correction to all orders by imposing that a bulk is supersymmetric to lowest order, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, if the bulk is supersymmetric, the vacuum energy on the brain will be proportional to the string scale to the power 4, which means that the volume in the bulk is suppressed by the volume of the bulk. And this is one motivation of the models that I will discuss in the following, the models in which the bulk is supersymmetric while the supersymmetry is broken only in the whole volume of the brain. So there is an explicit realization of how to do this in the context of type 1 string theory, which have been studied by various groups in the literature and produced interest in model building. Now, before proceeding to the description, precise description of how to construct such models, let me discuss some of the... Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay, you have the bulk of the compound.
Yes.
For plus n times. And I would expect that once you integrate the bulk of the compound, the extra n dimension, then you get four dimensional effective of the constant enhanced by this polyfactor.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah.
But then what do you call the brain?
It's the same thing. It's the projection of the vacuum energy in the brain. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Yeah.
You write the Einstein equation, then the vacuum energy in the brain is the cosmological theory of the Einstein equation.
Yes.
In that sense, definition. Okay.
Term which is not the curvature, which is not the scalar curvature, the other one, the Einstein equation.
Yes. So there is a particular bonus, let's say, of this scenario, which gives a particular, which an additional prediction, which allows to a new source of new forces at sub-millimeter scale, if the bulk is supersymmetric. So here we'll discuss the idea that it could be that. We don't see supersymmetry because it happens that we live in some non-supersymmetric brain, but supersymmetry could be a millimeter away in the bulk if the bulk is supersymmetric. So these new forces are related to the existence of scalars in the bulk. Now, if there are scalars in the bulk, in other words, if the bulk does not contain only gravity, only graviton, gravitino, but also it contains some scalars, then the mass of these scalars will be generated by the transmission of breaking of supersymmetry from the brain to the bulk, and therefore it will be the mass will be suppressed by a power of the M Planck times TV square, which is a string scale square. So this mass is 10 to the minus 4 electron volt, which correspond to wavelengths of some millimeter. So an example of such scalar, which is universal, is the radian modulus. In other words, the modulus whose vacuum expectation value determines the size of the bulk and comes from the higher component, from the trace of the metric in higher dimensions, no, along the bulk. So the correct normalized field is the logarithm of the size of the bulk. Now, And in general, it will get such a mass in these models. Now, the existence of this mass is not sufficient to give new forces observable. We must compute the coupling to matter and find that they are of the order of gravity. So the coupling to matter can be computed by taking the derivative of the mass, of the various masses compared to this modulus, and normalize with the mass. That is a relative strength to gravity. This can be easily done just by dimensional reduction. And you find, a number of order one. It depends on n, so it depends on how many extra dimensions you have. But it's of order one relative to gravity, and therefore they can be experimentally tested for any value of extra dimensions in the bulk. So this is something that one should differentiate from another universal source of of modification of gravity at short distances, which has to do with the change of the Newton's law. If you have more than if you have more than four dimensions, then the Newton law is not like 1 over r squared, it's 1 over r to the 2 plus n if you have n extra dimensions. So you change gravity at short distances. However, this change of the Newton's law will be effective at distances which are of the order of the size of the extra dimensions. So for two extra dimensions, it will be observable at millimeter. However, if you have more than two, then their size is much shorter, and therefore cannot be observable by present technology, the experiments that can run actually. However, this phenomenon, this source of extra forces at short distances is valid for any dimensionality of the bulk. So it gives you an extra source of modification of gravity at short distances, which will be there for all extra dimensions. Depends only on the property that the bulk is supersymmetric. Now, there have been several recent and old experiments that test gravity at short distances. So the most recent one that have published results, it's already 1 year. It's by Adelberger et al. It's not far from here, but in Washington. It corresponds to this red curve. And this, here the axis is the strength of the force relative to gravity. So gravity is here, 10 to the 0. And here is the wavelength of the new force. So this experiment measured gravity at 1 millimeter. A force which is of the order of gravity up to 200 microns. So it excluded any other sources to this to this scale. And this is the region that they plan to cover in the. In the near future.
Your estimate of the Radeon mass, does that much assume something about how the stabilization mechanism is?
No.
Well, just the sense that I could make a mass smaller than that by if the potential energy for the Radeon was of the order of 1 over r to the power, the magnetic energy of the Radeon has a.
No. Yeah, here I assume that you see that the Radeon is part of a multiplet, which is massless in the bulk, and therefore it will acquire a mass through radiative corrections from the breaking of supersymmetry. Of course, if you give a supersymmetric mass, then you can make it as large as you wish. But if it gets only through the supersymmetry breaking, then it will be of this order. Yes, from the brain to the bulk, because the bulk is supersymmetric to lowest order. Now, there is another experiment which runs now a couple of months at Stanford by the group of Kapitulnik, and it will cover this green region. So this curve corresponds to the Adelberg, to the curve that I showed previously, and so this new experiment is aimed to cover this green region, which is it looks at distances much shorter than 100 microns, so up to a few microns, but it is sensitive to forces which are also much bigger than gravity. Gravity is here, one. So it will improve the bounds, the present bounds, by several orders of magnitude, and it will can test forces which in the bulk which can be a million times gravity. Now, such forces cannot be induced by the scalar that I mentioned, neither by gravity, but they can be induced by other particles like Gates particles. If, for instance, you have, in addition to scalars, you have Gates particles in the bulk, then because of the Gates forces, the Gates particles coupled to charge with no derivatives, even if the coupling is extremely small, is as small as gravity. In other words, if the Gates coupling is is suppressed by the volume because of the propagation of the bulk, still it will induce forces which are much bigger than gravity because it couples with no derivatives. Like a million type or 10 to the 8 times gravity. So, for instance, if you have a baryon number, a Gates field, which Gates is a baryon number and it is in the bulk, then it will mediate such forces and will be can be explored by such experiment.
Are there other limits on this kind of Gates quotient? The bulk, for instance, comes from supernovas?
Yeah, for supernova. In order to satisfy the constraints of supernova, you need the bulk to have more than four dimensions.
For
Gates fields, yeah. Essentially, the bounds are the same because of the absence of derivatives. You translate the number of extra dimensions by n plus 2. So the n equal for the two extra dimensions for graviton corresponds to four extra dimensions for Gates fields. There is another. Apparently, recently there are also other groups that plan to start exploring this region, which correspond to experiments of atomic physics that use ultra cold atoms or ultra cold neutrons. In fact, there was an experiment in Grenoble that measured recently the bound states, the energy levels of the Newtonian potential by neutrons in the presence of, the Newtonian potential due to the Earth, and measure the energy levels. And apparently, they can use their device to explore even shorter distances. See, one of the major backgrounds which comes to these experiments has to do with van der Waals forces. These van der Waals forces become important roughly at a few microns, and at short distances, they go like 1 over r to the 7 instead of 1 over r to the square of the of graviton, they become very important at short distances. So to get around this, for instance, this experiment, in order to get rid of this background, they need to introduce superconducting layers to shield these van der Waals forces. However, if you have experiments which involve not objects but atoms, like or a neutron, then there are no van der Waals forces, so they can go to very short distances. So that's the idea. Yes.
The kiloton forces, I thought that they are such that they also couple to the mass. So the way you would detect them is not that suddenly the attraction became stronger, but that there is a non-universality between inertial and gravitational.
Yeah, all these experiments, all these forces, in fact, generated by the scalar that I mentioned, in principle violates, no, the radian maybe no, but for dilaton, yes, it violates the equivalence principle.
Yeah. So it gets harder to detect them finding extra attraction.
No, no. Depends what you look for. If you want determining to find an effect relative to gravity, not to check whether this force violates or not the equivalence principle, then it's easier. In order to see that they violate the equivalence principle, you have to do the experiment with two different materials, no? And see that the force becomes different. But that's second order effect. So in the following, I will discuss. This motivates why I will discuss also the possibility of having Gauge fields in the bulk, and what are the masses of how we can get small masses. But before that, before getting to this point, I will continue the. So what I had in mind now is to discuss various experimental predictions for particle accelerators. I'm not sure though how much time I should spend. Experimental predictions, particle accelerators have to do with three types of new effects: the existence of longitudinal dimensions of TV size. So these are seen by gauge interactions. This is one kind of effect. Then you have effects due to the fact that you have transverse dimensions, some millimeter, where gravity propagates. So these dimensions are related to the fact that gravity becomes strong. And finally, you can imagine effects from the fact that the string tension is at the TV, which has to do with string effects like Rydge excitations, black hole production, and so on. I think I will skip the first two, or I will just mention briefly what the consequences are, discuss a little bit the effects related to the TV strings, and then proceed. Now, the existence of TV dimensions is related, the main signal is the existence of tower of Kaluza-Klein excitations for standard model particles, which can be gauge fields to begin with, or even matter. So it should have the excitations of the photon, the Z, W, and gluons. And by definition, if there is a longitudinal dimension, means by definition a dimension whose size is bigger than the string size along the brain. So that means that the compactification scale is smaller than the string scale. And therefore, that means that as you increase the energies, this is the first scale of new physics, is the production of this resonances before you go to the string scale. So that is the this effect. Now, in order to study to be more precise, and since I'm going to use it also later on, I should discuss the localization of matter. Now, in general, as I mentioned in the beginning, that there are two types of open strings. Open strings that whose ends are both ends on the same brain or on parallel brains. Now, such open strings describe gauge interactions in their spectrum. So if you have parallel brains which are coincident, then these strings give you in the excitation gauge fields, but also they can give matter fields. However, you can have also open strings with one end in one brain and another end in a different brain, orthogonal, let's say, in the compact dimension space. Now, such open strings do not give rise to gauge fields, but they give rise to matter. So matter can be of two types, this type or this type. This type or this type. These fields, they have a correspondence in terms of the heterotic language, is that the excitations of open strings with both ends on the same brain or parallel brains give rise to the so-called untwisted fields, in other words, fields from which you can obtain by truncation of from 10 dimensions. So the always these fields have some memory about supersymmetry. The excitations of open strings with which are stretched between two orthogonal brains give rise to the so-called twisted fields. I mean, the vertices correspond to twisted fields, which always break some of the supersymmetry. Now, if one considers now some dimension, let's say, to be suppose that the blue brain is a 3 brain and the yellow brain is a 4 brain, just for so there is one dimension along the yellow brain which is compact, extra dimension, which has to be of the order of the string scale, so of the order of the TeV. That means that the excitations of open strings which have both ends on this yellow brain see the extra dimension, propagate in this additional dimension, and they have Kaluza-Klein excitations. However, the extensions of the open strings stretch between the two brains live in the brain intersection, which is only three dimensional and have no excitation along the extra dimension. Now you see there is an important property. If all quark and leptons, or if all matter fields were as well as Gates fields were corresponding to, were living in this yellow brain, it would imply that there is an extra momentum which corresponds to the Kaluza-Klein momentum, which corresponds to the extra to the propagation in the fifth dimension. Which would be conserved. If you had also strings of this type that live in intersection, the existence of the intersection breaks momentum conservation. So this is a basic difference between the two possibilities. And if the momentum conservation is broken, it would imply that all Kaluza-Klein excitations necessarily would be stable. They would be unstable, sorry, would decay, because there is no momentum conservation. So all the Kaluza-Klein excitations could decay into massless particles, let's say, quark and leptons. So there are two different, in principle, possibilities that can exist, and I will describe the couplings. So I will discuss first these two cases, which I will always distinguish in the following. So the blue lines correspond to, for instance, excitations of Gates bosons, which correspond to open strings we see the extra dimension. So I take one extra dimension for simplicity. And N1 and 2 and 3 corresponds to the Kaluza-Klein number, which is conserved. So this vertex obeys momentum conservation, and the coupling is the Gates coupling, which corresponds to the coupling of the zero mode times the delta function. And this momentum conservation can be seen easily just by Fourier transform of the higher dimensional theory. Okay. Even if the space is compact, the momentum will be conserved modulo integers, of course. However, if you introduce fields which live in the intersections, so these are fermions, for instance, that live in the intersections with green lines, then you can emit excitations of Gates fields which do not obey, which violate momentum conservation. So you can emit any excitation, and the Gates coupling the related coupling is not just the Gates coupling, but it has a form factor. So this delta is a parameter, a number bigger than 1, which depends on the model. I mean, it could be 2, 16, or so on, depends on what kind of orbifold you make. And there is a form factor which suppresses the coupling of the higher momenta. So for n large, the coupling falls off exponentially. However, when the radius is large compared to the string length, so here is the compactification radius, LS is the string length. When the radius is large compared to the string length, then this form factor is almost 1 as it goes to the gauge coupling. Now, this form factor, one way to understand it is by doing a Fourier transform, going from the momentum space to the position space, which let's call it Y. It's the extra dimension. Then it gives you a Gaussian distribution with a width, which is fixed by the string length times a numerical factor. So the intersection of brains corresponds to they have a width which is given by the string length, and you see in the limit where the string length goes to 0, then you find the delta function. In fact, the same phenomenon happens from the brains themselves. If I replace the green lines with closed strings in the bulk, because from the from every brain you can emit closed strings. Sorry, the other way around. If I replace the blue line by a closed string in the bulk, okay. So you have the dimensions now, which are the bulk dimensions. You can emit a closed string in the bulk. The momentum is violated because the presence of the brain, and the green lines are open strings on which describe the brain. So you find again the same phenomenon, which tell you that the brain has an effective thickness, the deep brain has an effective thickness, which is given by the string length times a numerical factor. So the string length regularizes this thickness, and okay, here I'm talking about brain intersection, so it's they describe the this Gaussian distribution of charge with this width. I mean, is it was it clear? You want is there a question?
So yes. This is interpreted as a recoil effect when you emit something.
Yes.
So
right.
I can easily understand when the brain is really moving.
Yes.
In the middle of the bark.
Mm-hmm.
But if we apply this to the oriented force, then what happens at the?
No, the oriented force has no degrees of freedom on it. Now the brain is dynamical.
Is it impossible to imagine some interaction which is emitted from oriented force?
No, because the oriented force has no degrees of freedom on it. It's not a dynamical plane. The brain is a dynamical plane you can move it away, and it can emit particles. However, the oriented force plane is a non-dynamical plane which is fixed.
Yeah,
so there is no degree of freedom that can mean.
My question is, let's imagine some ovipore setup with negative tension.
Yes.
Then my question applies to that setup. If there is a negative tension brain, and there is a matter, and
That's what I'm saying. The oriented pole, which can have negative tension, does not define a brain in this sense, because the oriented pole is not does not define a dynamical object, a dynamical brain. It's a static object which has no degrees of freedom. I mean, it cannot emit particles because there are no particles on the oriented pole. Yeah. So going back to the type of the two models I described, if all quark and leptons and gauge fields correspond to open strings with both ends on the brain, then all of them, they have couplings of the first type, and the momentum will be conserved. However, if the quark and leptons are of the same type, then you see that you can produce directly the excitations of gauge fields, and momentum is not conserved. So there are different... I will discuss first the second possibility. So the second possibility is that you can emit the excitations of gauge fields, let's say among four fermions, and at low energies, this emission gives rise to contact interactions, for instance, to four fermion interactions, which can be studied to obtain bounds from the string scale, on the compactification scale. And the present status of this bounds is that by taking into account the recent the analysis of the LEP data and so on, is that the compactification scale of such dimensions is about about 3 TeV, 3 to 4 TeV, I mean, at least the minimum, which means that if LHC, this is important for LHC, because if LHC, if there is such an extra dimension, LHC has no room, has no energy to see the second excitation. You can produce the first one, but not the second. I'm not aware, but we can discuss it. I think it's an exaggeration. I don't see how you can get bounce bigger than... this is for one extra dimension. So if you put more dimensions, then the bounce become bigger. I mean, it could be. I don't want to insist, but it's, for me, it's hard how from just from LEP energies, you can exclude physics all the way up. Yeah, okay, maybe we can discuss. Now, there is the second possibility, which I'm not going to describe. I think there will be next week someone who is talking about the so-called universal dimensions. So these are the... the dimensions where in which everybody propagates, so quark and leptons... as well as Gates fields, so that in this case you cannot produce the excitation, so you lose all the effects of resonances because you have to produce by pairs. So the limits become much weaker, become a few hundred GeV, and furthermore you can have new effects which are similar, like which can mimic supersymmetry, like for instance to have a stable lightest excitation which is related to the conservation of the Kaluza-Klein parity. Then there are effects which are related to the existence of transverse dimensions, which are accompanied by strong gravity at the TV. I mean, the main signal here is missing energy, because the graviton can be emitted for any process, and since it cannot be detected, it will give missing energy. And by the study of the angular distribution, I can, for instance, deduce the spin of graviton, which is 2, and differentiate the effect from other sources of missing energy, like, for instance, in supersymmetry, if you have production of missing energy due to LSP, which is fermion. Now the two sources of matter field and the two different of models give rise also to different bounds on the string scale itself. If you study these bounds by effective four fermion operators, which are induced not because of Kaluza-Klein excitations that I mentioned previously, but because of the exchange of string excitations. For instance, from some process on the brain, you can exchange excitations of open strings, and these excitations at low, diagrams at low energy give rise again to other four fermion interactions, whose size is cut off by the string scale and not by the compactification scale. Now, these effects should be compared to effects that may be induced by the virtual graviton emission. The virtual graviton corresponds to a closed string, and these are subleading. In this context, in the string context, these effects are subleading. The reason is that because the graviton is a closed string, then this diagram corresponds to a one loop, is an annulus, while this one, which is created by open string excitations on the brain, is a three-level diagram, which has a topology of the disk. So there is a string coupling suppression here and not there, which means that the study of these four fermion operators, which are suppressed by the string scale, test directly, probe directly the string physics, and not the low energy effective field theory. And now the type of four fermion operators that you generate here depends on what model you take. If you identify the matter fields with open strings which live on brain intersections, or matter fields or open strings which are stretched between parallel brains. So if the matter fields are correspond to open strings ending on the same set of brains, then you generate dimensionate effective operators. In other words, in addition to four fermions, you have two derivatives. And then the bounds are a few hundred GeV. However, if matter fields belong to different set of brains, orthogonal brains, then there are no derivatives. You generate dimension 6 effective operators, and then the bounds are bigger. So this, in fact, are in analogy with the situation that I described between non-universal and universal extra dimensions, where instead of having the string scale, you have the compactification scale. You obtain also the similar bounds. When am I supposed to stop? Huh? So the time is over. Okay, maybe then I stop here. So next time I will start discussing first the methods of brain supersymmetry breaking on the brain, okay, using type 1 theory. So to give you an idea how to realize such models, and then to continue discussing various physics problems like electroweak symmetry breaking. I will discuss also the U1, the masses of U1s that I promised. And okay, I will see until when I will go for 1 hour.
Yes, if anybody has any questions for Ignatius, please go ahead.
What's the justification of neglecting the gravitational background and taking space to do that?
Because the logic here is that I will try to study string models in flat space with no supersymmetry. So at the tree level, we'll satisfy the equations of motions in flat space. And then we'll do perturbation around this vacuum. That's the logic. I mean, you see, when supersymmetry is broken, the sooner or later we'll face the problem of stability of the vacuum because of the vacuum energy, the cosmological constant. Now, if we want to study, since we are faced here with non-supersymmetric models, in order to be able to study, to study some questions of physics and extract some information, we need models in which, at the lowest level, all equations of motion are satisfied, so that you can study questions up to one loop. In other words, up to the point where the cosmological constant will appear. Then you will need, of course, to fine-tune, to do some fine-tuning.
I don't see why the gravitational equation is not satisfied in that order, because you have an orthogonal block, it's a brain. So how can the
Because I assume that the other thing I mentioned is that the gauge coupling, the string coupling is weakly coupled. Okay, the string theory is weakly coupled.
Doesn't that mean that the brain is actually heavy?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Thank you, Ignatius, again.